Welcome back to the American Revolution Podcast, episode 53, Fire Ships. As promised, we are doing a second episode this week, and this episode we are going to talk about fire ships. Fire, that all-powerful element, the bringer of light and of life. It also served as a very good ally in naval warfare. Remember, during this time period in history, ships are made of wood, sails are made of cloth, and the rigging is made of rope. All of these things burn. So fire was going to be a very useful ally to the Continental Army. And they were going to be able to use it offensively and defensively. In the case of defense, well, we see early warning systems were being used during the colonial wars to warn of privateers and enemy ships, even before we had a war with England. They were using them often during the French and Indian War to protect friendly ports. So when the Continental Army arrived in New York City, a system would have to be put in place to warn of British ships. Generals Greene, Sterling, and Sullivan sought Washington's counsel on a signal system. And on April 20th, he gave the orders that a system of signals and beacons were to be placed on the heights and headlands at the entrance to New York Harbor to warn of the British arrival. The system is simple. During the day, they would use a red and white flag that could be seen over great distances, so the red and white flag would be waved during the daytime to warn of arrival of a ship. At night, well, bonfires could be seen for miles, so they would light a bonfire at nighttime if the ships were coming in at night. Then to take it one step further, they had a numbering system. If there were six or less ships, they would use one signal, so one flag, one fire. 7 to 20, then you use two. And if there was more than 20 ships, you were using three. And the signal system worked. It signaled the arrival of the British in the early summer. But by the end of the summer, the British had captured Brooklyn, and by the end of fall, the greater New York area. So they needed to expand the signal system. They needed to have a signal system that could warn the outlying areas, New Jersey, Connecticut, and upstate New York. Well, the innovator of this system would be Lord Stirling. He created a system that had bonfires and signals placed 15 to 20 miles apart and the highest points in those areas, so that the beacons, if at any point were raised in any one area, could be seen by the next beacon that could spread the word to the other beacons. And for that specific beacon in that area, it was also a signal to the militia that it's time to come out because the British are coming. And this signal system works, and it was in place for many months after New York City had fallen and Washington had moved his army into New Jersey. But Lord Stirling's beacons were not the only fires that could be seen on the Hudson. Fire ships were also going to be put in place during the summer months of 1776 while the British were still in and around the New York Harbor area. Fire ships are not a new concept, to say the least. They've been used by the British Navy for centuries. In 1588, they're actually going to be used against the Spanish Armada. The use of setting fire to an enemy's position or to their supplies, it can be even dated back into the Bible. There's a story of Samson tying firebrands to the tails of 300 foxes that were then set loose in Philistine cornfields, setting them ablaze. So in the case of fire ships, the Continentals are just using a tactic that they would have learned from the British Army or the British Navy and are applying it, well, against the British. Now, I've mentioned them before, but for those that don't remember, what is a fire ship? A fire ship is a watercraft that is loaded with combustible materials, for example, bundles of wood, cloth, rope, pitch, wine, turpentine, etc. These are all things that would have been available in colonial America. Now you laid the solid materials in the hull and on the deck, and then cover them with the liquids. That's how you start any basic campfire. Then when you got close to an enemy ship, you ignited them, and you threw grappling hooks so that the ship could get caught up in the rigging and onto the hull, and since it was close to the enemy ship, it would catch things like the rigging, the sails, even the hull could catch on fire. If you guys don't remember, we actually talked about the Americans using some fire ships in the South Carolina area when we were talking about when we talked about Clinton's first foray south. We talked about them going towards Savannah and how the Savannah port, they got chased away by the Patriots or local militia using some fire ships. Now, you set the ship off on fire, and you have grappling hooks, but how do you get the grappling hooks onto the ship? Well, you actually have a crew. Yes, there is a crew. The crew would actually take the boat downriver, and you usually did this at night because it's, you know, you have the cover of darkness. And then when you got close to an enemy ship, you threw the grappling hook on, you pulled in as close as you can, you ignited the ship, and then the crew would try and would hopefully make an escape to a longboat that they had in a strategic location that they could drop in the water and row away. All the while you're escaping, the enemy is trying to put out their rigging and sails, hopefully unsuccessfully, and then the ship is set on fire and sinks. So that's pretty much the basic understanding of what a fireship is. And for those that are just like, well, you know, Joe, stop talking. We already know all this. I'm sorry, but I just want to make sure I cover all my bases for those people that might not remember so well. So as we know, the Army is in New York City in the summer of 1776, and they're planning defenses. Washington was interested in this idea of fireships and sent word to the secret committee in Poughkeepsie that he wanted to have rafts outfitted for the task. Colonel James Clinton, who was the brother of the New York Governor George Clinton, neither of these men are related to Henry Clinton. There's a lot of Clintons running around in the Revolutionary War, so sorry for any of the confusion. Received word that fire rafts were going to be sent down to Fort Constitution. This was Roman's Fort. I remember we talked about Roman's Fort, how it kind of fell into disrepair. It never was really used. Well, there's a small time frame between middle to end of 1776 to the very beginning of 1777 before it's destroyed by the British, that Fort Constitution is actually manned. It does have some cannons there, but like we talked about in the Roman's Fort episode, it wasn't a very effective fort. But it did have the added bonus of being a area where you could stage some of these fire rafts for the task of attacking the British Navy. Well, Clinton said word back to the committee that they should also look into buying old sloops and schooners as well. As long as they float, the cheaper, the better. The thinking here is probably that the rafts were not going to cause significant damage to the larger ships, and that if you used a larger thing, something larger like a sloop or a schooner, that could be grappled on to some of the larger frigates, even a man of war, those ships could in theory be better suited to the task of burning the larger ships of the line that the British had in New York Harbor. Well, the committee sent word 2 days later that four rafts, were already underway and that they were working on three other ships, and those should be hopefully ready soon enough, and they would also be sent down to Fort Constitution upon completion. Well, the New York Convention also received help in the form of Captain John Hazelwood of Philadelphia. Sent by the Pennsylvania Committee of Safety, Hazelwood had made a name for himself on the Delaware River using fireships. Hazelwood not only brought with him a new way of setting up the fireships, but he also brought supplies from Philadelphia that they could use, which was greatly appreciated by the Continental Army. Unfortunately, when the Continental Army first uses fireships, Hazelwood will not be there. Hazelwood actually gets detained in the city for about a month taking care of other business that he is not able to get up to Fort Constitution. And the first time we actually use fireships are going to be used against the HMS Phoenix and Rose. The two frigates that, if you are remembering back to the early New York campaign episode, or even the episode on Fort Washington and Fort Lee, we have talked about these two ships before. And we're talking about the same incident and the same date. It was July 12th, 1776. Before the fort was finished, before the Chevelle de Free were put into place, before Washington even had moved his army from Brooklyn to New York City, these two ships run the defenses on the Hudson up into the Highlands area. They actually end up in the Tappan Zee area, where they'll actually mill about for a few weeks. So, the turtle is not ready, and the turtle will not be used for at least another few months. But something had to be done. So it's decided on the night of August 16th that two of these converted ships, a sloop and a schooner, would move downriver to intercept the two frigates with three row galleys that were manned by Connecticut watermen. Now, I realize I kind of direct quoted the book where I pulled the information from. Watermen is just another way of saying seamen or mariners or anything like that. So just a little vocabulary lesson there. Anyway, the five ships set out on the night of August 16th in search of their prey. In the lead was the larger fire ship, the sloop Polly, which was commanded by Joseph Bass, a Massachusetts captain, and the schooner was actually led by a Captain Thomas of Connecticut. Unfortunately, there's not much known, and any records that we have of this knight, they only refer to him as Captain Thomas. There's no backstory. We have no first name. We know nothing. So Captain Thomas was in the smaller schooner. Now, it's a rainy night, and in the shadow of the Palisade Cliffs, it was next to impossible to tell the ships apart. The frigates were the primary targets, but they also had three tenders with them. These were smaller ships that would follow the larger frigates. They were support ships. They were also patrol boats that would keep watch in the nighttime or when the ships were anchored to protect them against attacks from smaller vessels. You have to remember, it does take a little bit for a ship as large as a frigate to get moving, so the tenders were a protection. So while the ship got ready for a fight, if they were set upon by enemy vessels while the ship was anchored, the frigate could get ready and then get into the fight. So Bass and the Polly are in the lead. They're bearing it down on these five ships. Problem is, because it's so dark, they can't see. So Bass actually passes the frigates and hooks his ship to one of the tenders, the Shudlam. It's a bit of an odd name for a British ship, but I hope I pronounced it properly. Well, Bass ignites the Polly, which in turn ignites the Shudlam. This fire exposes Thomas and the schooner. He immediately starts taking a heavy cannonade from both the Phoenix and the Rose. Thomas, knowing that his mission is to take out one of these frigates, turns the schooner and bears down hard on the Phoenix. His men are able to grapple onto the Phoenix. They're getting shelled pretty hard. Thomas ignites the ship, and everything starts to light up. Now, unfortunately, it wasn't hooked in tight enough, so the crew of the Phoenix is actually able to cut away the parts that are burning, and the Phoenix will survive. Unfortunately for Thomas and his crew, they will not. You see, him and his five men jumped into the water because the fire actually was quicker than they anticipated, and they couldn't get to the longboat and get away. So they actually have to dive in the river, except they weren't, I guess, great swimmers, and they drowned. Sorry to say, but the attack is a failure. The Shudlam is burned. And the next day, the Patriots do make an attempt to capture the Hulk, which they succeed. They're able to hook it up under a heavy cannonade from the frigates, and they're able to tow the burnt hull of the ship back down to Fort Washington. There, they begin the salvage operation of whatever they can from the ship. They actually get a 6-pound gun, three smaller cannons, plus 10 swivel guns, and two cutlasses. Not a great consolation, but it's something. Washington, when writing Governor Trumbull, actually, he has some issues with the row galleys. He feels that in all of the confusion and with the, you know, the one ship burning and the schooner making an attempt, maybe the row galleys could have attempted to make an attack on the frigates and could have capitalized. If not destroying the ships, damaging them so they have to leave the Hudson River. But unfortunately, they didn't. They actually did nothing. And Washington was none too pleased with the men of Connecticut after the incident. General Heath, who had witnessed the attempt, began urging Washington to capitalize on this and try again, this time towards farther south to the ships in New York Harbor. Hazelwood had arrived and had completely reorganized the way the fireships were set up, which actually made them more effective. Unfortunately, delays did not see the rafts move downriver until the middle of September. And exactly 1 month later, on the night of September 16th, the four rafts went downriver with targets on the HMS Renown, Repulse, and Pearl. Unfortunately, George Collier, captain of one of these ships, had the same idea Heath did and felt that the Americans, they saw some success. It wasn't a total victory for them, but it was a successful attempt nonetheless. They were able to prove that the fire ships could burn a vessel. Luckily, they hooked into one of the tenders and not one of the frigates, because if the schooner Polly had gotten hooked into one of those frigates, who knows what could have happened. So Collier, urging the higher command of the British Navy, says that we really need to be on the lookout. And that they were. So on the night of the 16th, the four rafts head downriver and, under fire from the British, completely missed their targets. They ended up on the shore burning. This is unfortunately the last attempt of fire ships that are recorded on the Hudson River. Now, that's to say that fire ships aren't going to be used in other places. They were actually used to some effect in the South and also on places like the Delaware River and other smaller rivers like that. So fire ships are a useful tactic. It's just that on the Hudson, they didn't meet with success. So though the tactics are there, because as we saw with the Polly, it is capable to hook into a ship and burn it with a fire ship. So that's going to work. And the Americans will attempt to use it again, like I said, in other smaller rivers against smaller ships. They're not going to – the problem was they also went very big. They tried to use these fire rafts and fire ships against ships of the line. It's not going to work. So where the British were able to avoid catastrophe and losing some of their ships to these fire vessels of the Continental Army, in September of 1776, unfortunately, it would not be the last time they had run in with fire, because 5 days later, as we have talked about, New York itself will actually burn to the ground, or at least portion of the city will. So that's going to do it for this episode. Next week, probably sometime again in the middle of the week, I'm thinking around Tuesday or Wednesday, we are going to conclude our talk of river defenses on the Hudson, and we're going to end with Chains, and the self-titled book, Chaining the Hudson, is going to give us some we're going to look at some information about actual chains. When I'm talking like an actual chain that will be stretched across the Hudson River to protect it, the river from ships moving north. So that'll do it for this week. I hope everyone has a great weekend, and I will have a new episode out hopefully sometime the beginning to middle of next week. And that will do it for us. As always, keep that powder dry.